You're listening to the free edition of Sweden in Focus from The Local. If you would like to listen to a full-length version of the podcast, as well as an additional midweek episode, please check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade to Membership Plus. Here's this week's free edition.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Sweden in Focus, the Local's weekly podcast covering the latest news and talking points from Sweden. We are recording this episode on Wednesday the 22nd of June, a day earlier than normal because we'll be off celebrating Midsummer Eve on Friday. Coming up on this week's show, we'll look at whether there's been any movement on Sweden's NATO application. We'll also look at the elements of paganism and the drinking songs that link many Swedish holidays. We will shine a light on the Centre Party and discuss why they've seen a big dip in support over the last year. And finally, we'll see if there is a road to recovery for them before the election. I'm Paul Amani and I'm joined today by James Savage in Stockholm, Becky Waterton in Malmö. Richard's away this week, so just Becky in Malmö, and David Crouch in Gothenburg. How are you all?
Good, thanks. Looking forward to Midsummer, best day of the year.
Yeah, and this is actually the last episode before we take a summer break, apart from a special episode that we plan to air at the end of the Almedalen Political Week, which is the week after next, and where James and Richard will be in attendance.
And without your expert guidance, so expect the Almedalen episode to be different. We're calling it Gonzo. Hopefully we'll find some really interesting people to talk to as well, because that's the great thing about Almedalen, and there's so many interesting people to talk to, so we hopefully, you know, get some nice interviews there.
Great. And after that we'll take a breather, but we'll be back with season 4 of the podcast on the 6th of August, which will give us plenty of time to gear up for the September general election, which takes place on the 11th of September. Now, I'm going to be on holiday next week and I'll mostly be found swimming with my children in the lakes and sea around southern Stockholm. What about the rest of you? What would you recommend to any listeners staying in Sweden this summer?
Wild swimming is the absolute... You call it wild swimming. In Sweden, you just call it swimming.
It's just swimming, isn't it?
It's just swimming. It's lakes, and depending on where you are, it's, you know, lakes or the sea. There's so many great swimming spots. You can have a whole beach to yourself often, or a beach might be a strong word for it, but, you know, crop of rocks that you can, where you can, from which you can have a lovely swim in clear waters. It's wonderful. It's just wonderful. It's cold, but it's lovely.
I like to use Google Maps to hunt for hidden, unexplored beaches or outcrops of rock. You can look at the lakes and zoom in and sometimes find really nice spots that very few people know about. But I also think that the lakes offer more than just swimming. If you have the chance to get hold of a second-hand boat and to get out onto the water, you know, with all the caveats about life jackets and being safe and so on, I can leave my home and in half an hour I feel completely surrounded by wilderness. I can't hear any cars. There's gorgeous wildlife, the wild fowl. We have black-throated divers nesting on the lakes around here, which are a really spectacularly beautiful and exotic bird. And I can completely switch off. But also, you can have adventures out on the hidden parts of the lakes, go and have a picnic on an island, and so on and so forth.
Now, given that the biggest story from a Swedish perspective this spring and early summer has been the country's decision to join NATO, let's talk briefly about what's happening with the delayed process. Representatives from Sweden, Finland and Turkey met the NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg in Brussels on Monday to discuss a way forward after Turkey refused to greenlight the Nordic countries' applications. Did the delegates make any progress?
Yes and no. So they didn't make any progress in terms of coming towards approving Sweden and Finland's agreements, but just the fact that they were all there discussing it was progress in some kind of way, I'd say. Yeah, it's not like... They all kind of said, yeah, it's not going to be done by the big NATO summit in Madrid in the end of June. But even the fact that they're talking is progress over last week, I'd say, or the last few months.
Yeah, I mean, exactly, because you've got to remember what Turkey was saying before. They were saying no. I mean, they weren't saying, well, let's talk about it. They were saying no. And now they're saying, let's talk about it. And that's movement. Their base position is still no. But if they're talking, then they clearly see there's room for progress. And they're obviously being put under a lot of pressure from the Americans and from other NATO members. So it's movement, isn't it?
So Sweden may be on its way to joining NATO, but in many ways, it's still an exceptional place that stands out from the crowd, according to an article that you've written this week, David. And listeners can find a link to the article in the episode description. Some of the things you mention are support for working families alongside other benefits of the welfare state, the international melting pot that Sweden has become in recent years, the fact that Stockholm is second only to Silicon Valley in terms of the number of so-called tech unicorns per capita it has produced. But given that it's a holiday weekend, I wanted to ask about how Midsummer is just one of several Swedish holidays with a kind of pagan twist or, you know, non-religious. What are the rituals that have survived?
Midsummer actually, amazingly, has religious roots. When you look at what the traditions are around it, they seem to be so non-religious that it's quite a surprise to find that originally the celebration originates from marking the birth of John the Baptist on June the 24th. But obviously that time also coincides with the summer solstice, the longest day of the year. So the traditions around Midsummer have emerged from this religious holiday, but they have, it seems to me, absolutely nothing to do with religion. The Maistong is wreathed in leaves. It's all about life, and certainly this time of year, life is just bursting out in Sweden. And I don't know about you, but I find these short nights are just, they're like a drug almost. It's amazing. You get to 8 o'clock in the evening and there's still another 4 hours of daylight. I mean, I get such a rush from that. And clearly Swedes do too, because they lose it at Midsummer with the dancing and the singing. Songs like Smågrodorna, the little frogs, which are sung accompanied by a crazy dance where everybody gets in a circle and jumps over each other, or attempts to jump over each other, depending how much schnapps they've had to drink. And there are so many other traditions associated with Midsummer, such as, I think girls are supposed to collect 7 different types of flower in silence while thinking about the man they want to marry, and then that will come true, as long as you do it in silent.
I think you have to lay them under your pillow as well when you go to bed. That's what I've heard, but maybe that's what people do in Skåne.
Yeah, that's a tradition across Sweden, so absolutely.
Have any of you seen the film Midsommar? I feel like we might need to make a caveat and say that that's not what Midsummer's like in Sweden.
I'm watching it tonight for the first time. I wanted to watch it last night ahead of this episode, but didn't quite get time. But I'm preparing to be terrified tonight.
I was at a Midsummer last year with some of my friends, and I sent pictures of us dancing around the Maistong with my friend who was playing guitar, and we were singing Smågrodorna, and we all had flower crowns, and my friends were like, oh my God, it's real. Becky, don't die. So yeah, just... If you've seen that film, I can't handle horror films. It's definitely a horror film. That's not what Midsummer's like. Midsummer is much nicer, and yeah, hopefully no one's going to be murdered at any of our Midsummers, touch wood.
But if you're outside the town, out in the countryside, and watching all this madness, it does feel a little bit Wicker Man, the horror film with Christopher Lee. It feels like a very different reality, and that's part of the attraction. And It's not unique, I think, as an occasion, in that there are other festivities with religious roots in Sweden that are marked on a national scale, but in very non-religious ways, such as Valborg at the end of April and Easter as well, which have lots of very, very, very non-religious traditions associated with them.
Well, it feels like the religious traditions to do with Midsummer are kind of sort of pasted onto something that's much more kind of primeval and much more pagan and much more pre-Christian. That kind of oneness with nature, following the contours of the year and the lightness of the night. It's about that, really, isn't it? More that, and I think, you know, the fact that Christians have tried to Christianize every festival. You can even look at Easter and Christmas festivities, that there was a pre-Christian, there was a sort of pre-Christian festival that then the Christians then sort of hijacked for their own purposes a bit and pasted these Christian traditions onto them. And it feels like, you know, with Midsummer, that was very much the case.
Everything's kind of tagged on because it made it harder for people to be pagans, because they were celebrating, and then they ended up celebrating the Christian holidays anyway. It wasn't separate holidays.
Precisely, and you know, this is true not just in the Nordic countries, but you know, even the name Easter comes from is named after a pagan goddess, Eostre. So you know, they were literally saying, "Well, we're going to take this Christian festival," and they didn't even bother changing the name.
What about crayfish parties? Have you ever felt, as a foreigner, that you're about to be sacrificed at some point of the evening? Because I kind of have.
I don't feel I'm going to be sacrificed, but I feel like it is some sort of weird cult with everyone wearing crayfish hats and crayfish bibs and crayfish decorations everywhere.
It's just amazing that they've got all these, you know, fantastic traditions that are so deeply rooted, connected to these festivals. And they're very much, you know, profane traditions that are so widely followed. And it's, I think it's one of the wonderful things about living in Sweden.
If you've ever seen the Swedish film En kärleks historia, I think it's from 1970, it's called A Swedish Love Story. And it's a lovely story about these two teenage lovers. But there's a scene towards the end of the film where they attend a crayfish party and their parents meet for the first time, and about half the adults have sort of nervous breakdowns. It's just a kind of a scary portrayal of what can happen when organized fun goes wrong.
I mean, I've been to Midsummer parties where half the crowd was singles, or you know, people without kids, and half the crowd was people with kids, and there were two parallel parties going on, and they weren't entirely suitable for exposure to each other. It got quite chaotic and quite drunk, and yeah, lots of other things besides, and it was a slight tension in the air, I thought.
I just arrived in Sweden. Literally, it was the same month that I'd arrived, and my colleagues at the university invited me to this Kräftskiva out on an island in the archipelago, and there was a considerable amount of alcohol, all very good humoured, and then the drinking song started, and I had heard little bits and pieces about the drinking songs in Sweden, but clearly not enough, and I assumed, completely wrongly, that they were rather like British drinking songs, which are very, very rude. You know, they're the sort of thing that the rugby club will sing on the way back home after a match and too much beer. And that, so I kind of assumed that was what was happening around me. I didn't understand a word of it. And then they turned to me and asked for a British drinking song. So, you know, 30 seconds on Google, and I gave them one of these extremely ribald British songs and was greeted by really quite a shocked and stony-faced silence around the table, since when I've learned that they were singing, you know, just a couple of wholesome things about make yourself happy and have another drink.
Be a frog.
Huge cultural faux pas on my part. And I apologise here in public to any of my colleagues who might be listening to this podcast and who were present at that crayfish party. I'm very sorry.
I will say that filthy drinking songs do exist in Swedish. I was at a crayfish party in Östergötland one year, and the things I heard that night shocked me.
But this all sounds very pagan. Like,
but most Swedish drinking songs are mostly just about getting drunk, right? They're like, oh, I love alcohol. Let me have more alcohol.
Yeah, like Hey Langor is literally, if you don't drink the full shot, then you don't get another shot. Drink the shot.
It's lyrical genius.
And then there's the other one about I wish I had a shot on a rope that I could pull up and down my throat. And
you're going to sing that one in Swedish now, James.
Tänk om jag hade lite nubben på ett snöre I halsen. Tänk om jag hade lite nubben på det snöre I halsen. Jag skulle dra det upp och ner så att det kändes så många fler. Tänk om jag hade lite nubben på det snöre I halsen. Woo!
Now, the centre party. Over the course of the last year, Annie Love's party has plummeted in the generally very reliable Statistics Sweden party survey from 9.5% last May to just 6.6% in May 2022. And the latest Dagens Nyheter Ipsos poll released yesterday put them on just 5%. Why is the centre party struggling so much to make an impression at the moment?
It's been a very, very, very tough few years for the Centre Party. I mean, like you're saying, I mean, they're down on 5% now. They're on the same level now as the Liberals. The Liberals have moved up, the Centre Party have moved down, and they've met in the middle at 5%, which for a party that was polling near 10% before, it's pretty bad. They've suffered because I think they've had a very unclear position, and they've struggled between these two sort of elements of the party. On the one hand, they are traditionally, or for the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, they've been definitely very much a sort of economically liberal party. Right-wing economics, you know, looking for lower taxes, more economic freedom and that kind of thing. At the same time, they've taken a very strong anti-Sweden Democrat stance. So, you know, they pro-immigration, Sweden Democrats are anti-immigration. They see Sweden Democrats as a bit of a threat to the sort of free Swedish society, which means that they have two parties that they find it very difficult to cooperate with. So, you know, on social issues, on general sort of like value issues, the Sweden Democrats, and on the other side, on economic issues, the Left Party, which, you know, is very, very far from them on economic issues. So it's been hard for them to find a home. For the last few years, they've supported the Social Democrats in government, but it's been a very difficult position for them to articulate, particularly because the Social Democrats also need support from the Left Party. And they've been trying to sort of claim that despite supporting the Social Democrats in government, voting, you know, letting them through on confidence votes and the budgets and everything, that they're somehow in the middle, what they want to call the broad middle of politics. The problem is the only party in the broad middle of politics is the Centre Party, so it's not that broad. At the moment, it's about 5% broad. So they've got a problem. They increasingly look like they're living in an alternative reality to the other parties. Everyone else has decided, well, we're going to split up into two groups, one to the left and one to the right. And they're like, well, no, we refuse. And it's made them look obstructionist and, you know, even kind of puerile at times. But it's difficult for them because, you know, they have splits within the party. There are those who are very sort of invested in cooperation with the centre-right, which the centre-party, you know, did. They were in government with the centre-right for 8 years. And you know, many people in the party basically grew up with that kind of view of the party.
Yeah, even Annie Lööf was a minister in their government.
Absolutely. And we're talking Annie Lööf here, who is, you know, she's very much on the right of politics economically. But they've taken a very strong position against working with the Sweden Democrats. So that kind of leaves them stuck with the Social Democrats, but finding it very hard to articulate why and what they hope to get out of that relationship. So the longer they have been in that relationship, the more it has eaten away at their support, and they've been unable to articulate really why people should vote for them. So now you have this, you know, this position, this kind of strange position of being one of the richest political parties in Europe. They have a lot of money because they sold a newspaper group in the early 2000s, which netted them a huge amount of money. They've got loads of money in the bank, but they give the lie to this idea that money can buy you votes because they've really failed to make an impression, or they've, in fact, they've made a negative impression, and they are sinking.
They feel a bit out of the loop to me. It's like you say, they're drawn to this idea, kind of married to this idea of, oh, we're going to have a big centre government and we're going to be in the top of it and everyone's just going to happily come towards the centre and be friends. It's like, that's not working for you. And if they're going to, it feels like unless they adapt, they might be at risk of even going under the 4% limit. Maybe not this election, but next election if they don't do anything about it. And maybe that's got something to do with the fact that Annie Lööf has been their party leader for so long. She's been their party leader for over 10 years. 2011 she started, so maybe they would benefit from kind of shaking things up a bit and getting a new image or something. I don't know.
I mean, potentially. I mean, it's interesting because I think if you look at how the countries with proportional systems and with lots of parties like Sweden would do this, you know, the centre party's position should work. This idea that you have two very, very distinct blocks, one of which will always rule, is not entirely compatible with this kind of multi-party system that you have in Sweden and a proportional electoral system. In a sense, what the Centre Party is saying makes sense, but the other parties aren't on board with it. And unless these blocks start to fray, and parties peel off from them, then it's going to be very difficult for Centre Party to find a place.
I also think a little bit like, could this be kind of emblematic of the polarisation we've seen just kind of across the world, across Europe in the past few years, like people moving further away from the centre and further towards the extremes? Like maybe the centre isn't that interesting for people anymore, because you're even moving further to the right if you're right wing, or further to the left if you're left wing.
It does feel like that, certainly that's what's happening. And what the Centre Party would say is that we want to represent the people who reject that kind of idea. I mean, like the people who would vote for Macron in France, perhaps, and say, well, they look longingly to Macron and say, well, this is, we want to emulate what he's achieved there, but obviously in a very different system, in a very different set of circumstances. But basically saying, for those who reject the extremes, we're the place to go to. But it seems that most Swedish voters, like you say, they've decided that while, even if we don't vote for the Sweden Democrats or don't vote for the Left Party, we are sort of willing to tolerate that the parties we do vote for work with them and on some way, shape or form.
I think it's very hard to see the Centre Party returning to the alliance fold in the way that the Liberal Party has done over the past year, while Annie Lööf is still leading the party. And it seems in this quasi-bloc situation as though Lööf is now manoeuvring towards the Social Democrats. She appeared on the American warship, the Kearsarge, at the beginning of this month, together with Magdalena Andersson, the Prime Minister, and both of them were very critical of the centre-right, so that the rhetoric against the centre-right has been stepped up. And at the same time, her party has voted down the vote of no confidence against Morgan Johansson, and is now supporting the budget vote that is taking place at this very moment. And if you look at other countries in Scandinavia, in Norway, the Centre Party is actually in government together with the Social Democrats. In Denmark, the Social Liberals are enabling the Social Democrats to stay in government. So there's a certain pragmatism there. And also, I think that the Social Democrats are helping Annie Lööf by moving to the right themselves, and moving further towards the centre and making it easier for an accommodation with the centre party. But certainly the policy of vagueness over where they stand just is not working for them electorally at the moment. At the moment, you kind of expect Annie Lööf to make a much more clearer statement about supporting a future social democratic government.
How can you vote for a party if you don't know what they stand for?
Well, yeah. But like you say, it's very clear where they stand. It's very clear that at the moment that they are more aligned to the Social Democrats, or they're more likely to, that they're going to, if they do a deal with anyone, it will be with the Social Democrats, either to support Social Democrats in government as they're doing now, or to even go into government with them. And there's been talk that Annie Lööf is quite keen actually to, in the end, go into government with them. But they have to find a way to articulate that. And that seems to be eluding them at the moment.
We're talking about them as a centrist party, but fiscally they're actually very right wing. Might they be well served by moving more to the left on economic policy?
Well, they might, but they have to find a reason to exist, don't they? They have to articulate a reason to exist. And what they managed to do in the first part of this parliament, when they were doing quite well in the polls, was their reason to exist was to basically pull the Social Democrats to the right on economic policy. Did quite well out of it. They were up on 9% when they were forcing right-wing economic policy on the Social Democratic government. And so, they had a constituency of people who kind of agreed with them, said, we don't like the Social Democrats, we're against sort of nationalism, but we're in favour of liberal economic policies. It worked well. Now, but if they're not in a position to get that kind of political concession through, then they have to find another way to articulate what they are. They have to find something else. They have to find another reason to exist. Otherwise, why not just vote for the Social Democrats?
Why are they not attracting more votes from traditionally right-wing voters who are horrified by the other parties cooperating with the Sweden Democrats?
For the reason that I think that those voters are increasingly sceptical as to whether the Centre Party can really make a big difference to government policy. And also because, partly I think as well, because the Centre Party has not really been talking policy at all in the last few years. It's been talking very much about, this question, which side are we going to ally with? It's been talking about its criticisms of the Left Party and the Sweden Democrats on a sort of an ideological basis. but what is it that they want to achieve in government? What is it they, what are the policies that they want to get through that are distinctive and that give people a reason to vote for them rather than for somebody else? They had a very hard time articulating that.
They've sort of started cooperating with the Left Party a little bit now. They reached compromise on pensions and the budget last week, the budget that's going to be voted on today. Are they softening on that? Because previously they just would not speak to the Left Party at all.
But even here, they're talking... They have this because they won't talk to the Left Party. The Social Democrats are doing relay talking, so they're talking to each party separately, yeah. and then putting a proposal forward that they know both parties will accept. But what they're not doing is what's not happening is the Left Party, the Centre Party, and the Social Democrats are sitting around a table together and making policy together, which is part of why people view the Centre Party increasingly as a non-constructive voice in politics, and I think that's one of the things that's really damaged them.
Exactly. So is it something they should start doing?
I suspect that this is something that they are going to have to start doing.
They might even already be doing it behind the scenes. They're still not really agreed inside her party on what they want to do, so she can't really come out and say, look, I'm talking with the Left Party. They need to kind of resolve those issues within the party before they start coming out and doing this stuff in public, making a statement about it.
Yeah, I think internal party management is clearly one of her big issues here. So many people who in the party who are opposed to or barely tolerate cooperation with the Social Democrats.
The Left Party's a bridge too far.
And the Left Party's a bridge too far.
Mm. On the other hand, on sort of specific issues, there might be room for accommodation, like on schools. I noticed that Lerf wrote an article in Dagens Nyheter, I think it was last week, about schools, and her suggestions were very, very pragmatic, and she talked about taking profits away from privately run schools if they didn't deliver sufficiently high results for their pupils, which seemed to me to be an olive branch to the left, for example.
When you look at their policy on free schools, on privately run state schools, they're saying the same kind of things that quite a lot of other parties across the spectrum are saying. Not in favour of abolishing the schools, but in favour of somehow restricting them and placing more demands on them. They're not exactly distinctive policies that set them apart and give a positive reason for new groups of voters to go to them. It's a real dilemma. They've got to find an ideological anchor that will be consistent with the alliances that they're trying to build.
Yeah, so she is sort of stuck at the moment. Do you have any sort of predictions for what Annie Love will do to attract more voters in the next few months?
I think she's going to end up having to pick a side and then hope that'll help. Although whichever government she ends up working with, like if she works with the Social Democrats, they're probably going to work with the Left to some extent, probably not in government, but they'd at least, the Left would support them kind of in the way they're doing now. And if they work with the Alliance, then they'll be supported by the Sweden Democrats. So she's kind of going to be working with one of them anyway. I can't imagine a situation where the Social Democrats and the moderates and the centre are all in government together. Like that's not going to happen.
No, but that's her dream. Basically, I mean, that's where Annie Lööf wants to take would have liked to take politics, to have a broad coalition across the middle that involves the Social Democrats and the moderates. The Social Democrats and the moderates are absolutely 100% opposed to anything that looks like a grand coalition. And we almost got there with the December agreement, which was agreed in 2014, sort of a grand coalition light. And the moderates' experience of that particularly was extremely negative, and they ended up that's now something that's politically absolutely impossible for them to agree to, and it's left the Centre Party a bit high and dry.
And what kind of party is the Centre Party if we look at it sort of historically? How long has the party been around?
They were formed just before the First World War, 1913, and they were originally formed as the kind of the Farmers' Union, or the Agricultural Union, but they renamed in about the 1950s to the Centre Party because they started getting support not just from kind of the rural areas of Sweden, but also from people in cities. I think they're definitely different because they have this mix of right-wing policies and left-wing policies, so they don't really fit in anywhere else.
Yeah, well, I suppose depending on what you consider to be a left-wing policy on, social issues, I mean, they would say that on social issues, they're just liberal.
Socially liberal.
They're socially liberal. Not so much left-wing.
Yeah. But they speak a lot about being kind of humane and humane policy on migration. There's a surprising amount of policies where they're kind of they fall down on the Green Party, Social Democrat side of the fence rather than the moderate side of the fence.
But I think, you know, I think when you look at their views on migration, for example, now those would these days be characterised as sort of on the left of politics just because of the way the politics has moved. So the Centre Party would say, well, we've had these views all along. 10 years ago, these weren't on the left of Swedish politics, at least. They were shared by parties on both the right and the left. And, you know, when you look at their views on migration, they, traditionally, you know, on asylum migration, what they've been in favour of is having a very open policy on letting people in, but a much more restrictive policy on money. So basically saying, well, you know, people can come here, but we're going to be quite restrictive about the kind of financial support that we give to people. So, it's not left wing as such. I think there are some points of considerable difference between them and the left party on some of the details of that. And, you know, they've been very much in favour, for instance, of allowing, you know, and this ties in with their business friendly approach, which is to say allowing people to come to work, you know, so they've been very much in favour of work permits, of a liberal view on work permits, letting people come and work in Sweden, you know, if they can get a job and if there's someone who wants to employ them.
Yeah, and I think we can kind of see that in the work permit reform that's just come through. They're one of the only parties that didn't think that there should be more arbetsmarknadsprövning, so that's this kind of test to see if it's a job where there's a shortage of workers. And they also were against there being a cap introduced to the minimum salary you have to earn. So they're one of the only parties that kind of said, no, we like the system how it is. We don't want to change it.
They tried to position themselves a few years ago as the Green Party of the right.
Yeah.
So it had this sort of environmental profile.
They have had an environmental profile. Their environmental profile has been slightly different, though, to the Green Party in the sense that they, you know, the Centre Party still has these strong roots in the countryside. A lot of it's about also, you know, protecting the rights of landowners, of people who own forestry, for example, and those affect their views on things like, you know, protecting lakeside areas. So, you know, the Centre Party are more in favour of allowing people to build on the edge of lakes and the seashore, protecting the rights of people who own property in rural areas, but also protecting the, you know, development of rural areas and promoting the development of rural areas. So that's a very big priority for them, and that sets them apart from the Greens, who are more or less in favour of a more restrictive view on that kind of thing.
It also feels a little bit like the Christian Democrats are trying to pinch some of the Centre Party's voters at the moment. I think all this stuff about Ebba Busch kind of talking about Sweden's heartland and posing with guns shooting elks or whatever, that kind of feels like she's trying to sneak her way into their voter group and kind of sneak some of those rural votes for the Christian Democrats instead.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I was just thinking how fascinating it is. You don't have to be a politics nerd to become fascinated by how the bigger themes of European politics are playing out in Sweden and how personalities and characters like Annie Lööf, who's the leader of, you know, to all intents and purposes, a small party, is still worth looking at in some detail because of just how much she means in this situation of quasi-block politics, where small shifts can make a huge difference, and people will be looking at the elections in Sweden in September. It's the largest country in Scandinavia, and the outcome will really make an impact, and it in some respects will be a referendum on the asylum policies of the last 10 years. I think that's why it's worth devoting so much attention to a small political party like the Centre Party.
Yeah, very much so. And I think, you know, it might feel strange to listeners who come from, you know, if you come from America, for example, where you're used to two large parties that have, you know, about half the votes each every election, you know, and then to come to Sweden and we're taking our magnifying glass to look at these tiny parties. But they really, really matter. And they, you know, the Centre Party is so interesting. It's like it feels like a bit of a bellwether of Swedish politics. You know, they are that party that sort of shifts sides depending on the overall sort of political climate.
It all goes back to this kind of consensus that they're able to negotiate with everybody and they're able to kind of be in whatever government. That they see that as one of their strengths.
Well, they would say it as one of their strengths. I think if you speak to
they would say it rather than Swedes would say it. I think if Swedes thought it was one of their strengths, they'd be polling it a little bit more than
right. 10%. Exactly. And you know, I think one of the things that's really interesting when you speak to people on the right of Swedish politics, you know, political activists, politicians, and particularly, you know, actually voters on you know, moderate voters and Christian Democrat voters. They kind of spit blood when the Centre Party is named these days. They're seen as turncoats and seen as, you know, inconsistent and immature. And, you know, you hear this a lot about Annie Lööf when you speak to people on that side of politics.
I think it's really interesting that she's considered a turncoat by the rest of the right when they're the ones who have done a 180-degree reversal.
Yeah, this is also the kind of impression I get from the centre, is that they wouldn't be that much of an outlier 10 years ago, but they're just the only ones that haven't changed their policies to fit in more with the Sweden Democrats.
Yeah, but the right-wing parties, the moderates and the Christian Democrats, would say, look, we've had to adjust to the fact that the Sweden Democrats exist and that they are big, and we can't just ignore them and wish them away. If people have voted for the Sweden Democrats in such large numbers, we have to accommodate that. And this, and they, you know, they would see the centre parties being unrealistic, utopian, and unwilling to accept the new political landscape in Sweden.
Even though they also said they would never cooperate with the
Sweden
Democrats.
Even though they also said they would never cooperate with the Sweden Democrats. But, you know, the maths, they would say, you know, caught up with them, and they're just accepting. They're just accepting the maths and the votes of the Swedish public that have put them in this position and forced them to work with the Sweden Democrats.
That takes us to the end of this week's Sweden in Focus. Thank you for listening, and thank you to this week's guests, Becky Waterton, James Savage and David Crouch. You'll be hearing from James and Richard again in July, and the rest of us will be back on the 6th of August. Until then, take care.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
That's all for this week's free edition of Sweden in Focus. If you'd like to hear a full-length version of the podcast each week, as well as an additional midweek episode with more interviews and analysis, please upgrade to Membership Plus. Make sure to check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade. Sweden in Focus is a podcast by The Local Europe. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. The publisher is James Savage.